pack up her material and exchange pleasantries. Adams walks over to me and says in a grave tone, "You know, Ron, there were some people in government who argued that you should be arrested." Grinning broadly, he laughs, and I agreed with them. Over the last decade, there have been many times like this when I have wondered, as the Talking Heads put it, how did I get here? They were heady days. It was spring 2001, and I had just received authorization to set up the Citizen Lab at the University of Toronto. The initial funding came from the Ford Foundation, and the idea was simple: to study and explore cyberspace, though few called it that back then in the context of international security. The dot-com era was in full swing, the internet an information superhighway spreading like a brush fire. Time-worn political divisions, the Cold War, South African apartheid, and so on, relegated to history books. And generally, people were in a good mood, a very good mood. At the dawn of the 21st century, it was hard not to be an optimist. 9/11 ripped into all of that and left us all reeling. For the next year or so, most of us wondering, what kind of world do we now live in? In January 2003, I published an article in Millennium, a journal published by the London School of Economics, arguing that this singular event had reshuffled the deck around issues relating to cyberspace, and that trouble was brewing. Rightly or wrongly, those planes smashing into New York's World Trade Center, the Pentagon, and a field in Pennsylvania were viewed as a failure of cyber intelligence, of authorities not monitoring internet communications and activities closely enough. At the same time, the prevailing view for most of those connected was that the internet cannot be controlled by governments. The net interprets censorship as damage and roots around it, as John Gilmore, founder of the Electronic Frontier Foundation, once famously quipped. I was not so sanguine. That article has been haunting me for years. It only touched the surface and has struck me ever since as unfinished business. It was called Black Code. National security apparatuses have deeply entrenched subterranean roots whose spread is difficult to curtail, let alone reverse. When there is human agency involved, while the internet often seems to be operating in an ethereal realm, it has proven itself human, perhaps all too human. Those responsible for security rarely agree that something is outside of their control. Instead, they ramp up. Some governments in the 1990s were already erecting borders in cyberspace, long before 9/11 shifted the terrain around state surveillance and gave it added impetus. Anti-terrorism laws, unthinkable on September 10, 2001, were proclaimed with little public debate across the industrialized world. And the United States in particular, but certainly not alone, began quietly building offensive cyber attack capabilities. The enemy was terrorism, an abstract noun, but Al-Qaeda was a real and immediate foe. I wrote in a Globe and Mail op-ed on January 1, 2003, government armed forces from around the world have devoted increasing time, money, and energy to develop offensive cyber warfare capabilities, including the capacity to engage in state-sponsored denial-of-service attacks and the use of Trojan horses, viruses, and worms. I wish I had been more vociferous. The anti-terrorism laws proclaimed after 9/11 were, in the main, defensive in nature, and many had sunset clauses attached because they were considered extraordinary, extrajudicial measures in a time of existential crisis. However, especially vis-a-vis cyberspace, this defensive posture quickly morphed into developing offensive capabilities. With rare exception, those laws are still with us and have been enhanced. In this domain, the only thing the sun appears ready to set on is the right to communicate and share information privately. Founded in the spring of 2001, just prior to the incendiary events later that year, the Citizen Lab's mission was to combine technical interrogation, field research, and social science to lift the lid on the internet. It remains so to this day. We aim to document and expose the exercise of power hidden from the average internet user, and we do so basically by using the same practices as state intelligence agencies, by combining technical intelligence and field investigation.